I think the problem for the GOP elite right now is the GOP voters have basically spoken, and that Donald Trump represents their party.
I'm going to say, look, this is what the people want. You know, most people have come out in favor. We've gotten tremendous endorsements over the last short period of time.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:08 and it is May 9th, 2016. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. This morning, we kick off a new feature on the program. It's our Allstate CEO Spotlight. We'll have that coming up in a bit. But first, from around the world, here's your global market intel from the WGN Market Desk. Asian stocks mainly mixed this morning after China's trade contracted in April and U.S. job growth came in weaker than expected. Chinese exports contracted by about 1.8% in April compared with a year earlier, and imports plunged about 10.9%. Disappointing U.S. jobs data last week fueled speculation the Federal Reserve might keep interest rates low for another year. The economy added about 160,000 jobs in April, less than the forecast of about 200,000. But wage growth accelerated by about 0.3% over the previous month compared to March's 0.2% rise. Unemployment held steady at 5%. On Wall Street, stocks closed modestly higher on Friday, but ended the week down after 3 days of losses. The Dow Jones Industrials Average rose about 79 points, or about a half a percent, to 17,740. The Standard & Poor's 500 rose about 6 points to about 0.3%. The NASDAQ also saw an increase of about 19 points, just about a half a percent. Benchmark U.S. crude oil is just under $45.50 per barrel this morning. The dollar gained against the yen and was nearly unchanged against the euro. The Greece bailout is front and center in the world today. Greece's parliament has approved a bill that reforms the debt-ridden country's pension and tax systems. The bill, introduced as part of requirements for that country that country must meet under its third international bailout, is set to increase Social Security and pension contributions and also to raise taxes for most people. There's a big recall that's underway today. Pilgrim's Pride is expanding a 5 million pound recall of cooked chicken products. Federal food safety regulators say that the latest expansion by the largest poultry producer in the U.S. includes a variety of chicken products potentially contaminated with foreign materials. Food inspectors have found items such as wood, plastic, rubber, and metal. Well, on our CEO Spotlight this morning, sponsored by Allstate, our first CEO Spotlight, Jim Alvarez of a company called Gesture is profiled, and he's with us this morning. Jim, I'm curious, as CEO, what it is that makes you tick? What is it that makes you, as a CEO, get up and get going every day?
For me, I have a couple of businesses that I'm a part of and spend a lot of time on. But my main business is called Gesture. And for that, we help charities raise money. And so nothing gets you out of bed faster than being able to help charities raise money. The other cool part is that we do have 55 full-time employees. Started in my basement, and seeing that as our company grows and get to that point where we have that many employees, it's really cool to see them develop and see them get better and just have that help them grow as a person.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with Gesture, give us a sense of what it is that your company does.
Okay, cool. So I started in February of 2011 in my basement, just like most tech startups do.
Garages and basements, right?
Exactly. Started with the name Auctions by Cellular, and that's exactly what we do. So if you've ever been to a charity event with a silent auction, instead of writing your name down on a piece of paper, we have the technology that allows you to do it on your mobile phone. The other cool thing that we do is we send a team of people to help administer the registration for the charities. We help with the bidding process, and then most importantly, we help with the checkout process. And so in the past 5 years, we've helped charities raise over $300 million. And we do this all through our technology and our team.
You're keeping track, $300 million. That's an important thing for you, though.
We're going
right?
for a billion.
A billion?
Yes.
Do you have a timetable set up?
We think we can achieve it in the next 3 years.
What sorts of charities do you like to pick, or does it just anybody who asks you for help?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because we help all kinds of charities. So we do all the work for the Chicago Cubs, the Blackhawks, LA Kings, University of Notre Dame, hospitals like Rush Hospital, And then we do so many small the core of our business is the smaller organizations, like smaller schools, smaller nonprofits that are local that you've never heard of before. That's the core of our business. But, you know, we do help major, you know, national nonprofits like American Heart Association, Ronald McDonald House Charities, and Make-A-Wish Foundations and stuff like that.
You're talking with the CEO of Gesture this morning, our first Allstate CEO Spotlight. You can find them online at gesture.com and also at Twitter. You can follow them at Gesture Team.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Friday's jobs report from the Labor Department showed April hiring was lighter than anticipated, with employers adding just 160,000 jobs and the unemployment rate remaining unchanged at 5%. The Dow did end the session 80 points ahead. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ also saw gains. Apple is under pressure as investors worry that the smartphone market has matured and that growth is stalling. Still, Apple is worth about $510 billion, making it the most valuable stock in the S&P 500. Pilgrim's Pride is expanding a 5 million pound recall of cooked chicken products. Food inspectors have found items such as wood, plastic, rubber, and metal in some Pilgrim's Pride chicken. The peach crop in much of the Northeast was decimated by sub-zero temperatures in mid-February in what one fruit tree expert describes as the Valentine's Day massacre of the peach blooms. New Hampshire, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts lost 90% or more of their peach crops. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell, 519, our Allstate CEO Spotlight this morning. Jim Alvarez of Gesture, gesture.com with us. And, Jim, I'm interested, you know, what it is, take us back to the very beginning of Gesture, how you got this started, how you got it off the ground, where you came up with the idea.
Yeah, so I've been going to charity events for a long time, and I always knew there had to be a better way. The concept of just going up, writing your name down on a piece of paper, leaving, not recognizing when you've been outbid, I always knew there had to be a better way. And then the worst part is, with paper and pen, is that you have no idea if you won or lost. So at the end of the night, you're waiting in this line to see if you won or lost. And then maybe you did win, maybe you didn't win. And either way, it's not a good experience for the donor. And so I had some buddies that had this technology that was text-based bidding, and they invited me to come to an event and see what they do. And so I saw it, and right away it just clicked, like, this is a much better way to do it. And so I asked them what their thoughts were, and their thoughts were to try and sell this technology directly to nonprofits. And my background from a previous life is in building teams. And we could talk about that later. It's kind of an interesting background, but that's what I'm good at, is building teams. I'm not a not a technology person. I didn't come from the nonprofit world. But I knew that just having nonprofits buy this technology was going to be too hard. And so I said, let me set up teams and we'll run around the nation and we'll help implement the technology and help the charities. And I remember talking to a few people back in the day, and they said, that's a really stinky idea. There's just too many human beings involved. And I said, well, that's what my specialty is building teams. And so just to give you an idea, Steve, is last weekend we had over 500 shifts in the field from California to New York. And so managing, making sure that 500 people showed up on time with the right equipment, that's our competitive advantage.
It's interesting that you say that you don't have the background in technology and charity. And successful CEOs, successful companies generally have this sort of same recipe, is that there's one person who knows this, they bring in the other people who know that, and they form and make this perfect thing.
Yep.
How hard is that to do? How hard is it to find those people to get your vision together to where it's at?
Again, that would be one of the things that I would give myself a pat on the back for, is being able to identify and find these people and then also get them to believe in what we're trying to do. I'll give you a good story, is that in 2012, when I decided to build my own technology, I only knew one developer, Richie, I'd known him from playing poker. And so I called him and I said, Richie, I need to talk to you. And he said to me, okay, I'll meet with you. And he thought my email got hacked or I couldn't hook up my printer to my, network. And so I sat him down and I said, I need you to help me build a mobile bidding platform. And he said, well, okay. And so Richie went to University of Michigan, super smart whiz kid. The first job that he had out of school was the same job that he currently had, which was 15 years later. At the time, he had a wife and two kids. Now he just had his third kid. But I asked him to quit his job, and I couldn't pay him. But we were going to build this mobile bidding platform, and we were going to help charities raise a whole bunch of money. And so, you know, getting him to believe what we were doing. And at that point, we were already about a year old, and so we had some traction. It wasn't like day one. But he saw what we were doing and believed in what we were doing, and literally quit his job and started building our platform.
And that's the magic I don't understand about CEOs, is that they come to you with these ideas and you convince people to work for free. How do you do that?
Well, I gave him a nice piece of the company, okay, and I said, don't worry, someday we're going to be able to make some money. And luckily, you know, it took us a little while, maybe a little longer than I had told him. But here we are now, you know, 4 years later, and we do make money and we do get paid appropriately. And we have a really good company now.
And you bring up poker because the poker face is a good tell, I guess, is the poker term, right? If you're trying to bring me on board and I see in your face that, wait a second. How important is it to have that personal connection and also know what you're talking about, be honest, ethical? People can tell when you're not, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And that's who I am in general. So I tell people when we screw up, I'm the first one to admit, hey, we screwed up. Let's own it. Let's fix it. And let's make it right. And all of those things, honest and ethical and being a true team player is what's key.
And team player is another part of this, too. It's if you don't have that ability to bring a team together, you're going to fail, right?
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about that. I'll tell you another quick story is that in a previous life, I had a company where we sort of took our eye off the ball of sales, and I vouched I would never do that again. So when I started Gesture, we literally just sold. And we could never afford to hire someone to help us manage our operations aspect of it. So another, you know, proud thing is that we've never raised the Series A, so we've never gone out to you know, formal institutional money to you know, so we never had like a whole bunch of money to be able to do all the things we wanted to do. We bootstrapped it, and as we got some money in, we hired some more people, and got some more money, we hired some more people. So the funny story is, in 2013 was when the first time we were able to hire a VP of operations, and when Steve Grenius came on board, he said, okay, so how many events do we have? This was in January. He said, how many events do we have the first week in March? And he asked the operations team, and they looked and said, we have no idea. We just know it's a lot. And he knew right then and there that he was in trouble. But what happened was is he came in, and he realized that we were a sales organization. That's all we did. And he was able to come in, put in the processes necessary to make sure that we can handle 100 events in a week.
People, when they hear that you work with charities, might say, well, are you making any money doing that? Because charities obviously want to keep as much money as they can for their charitable purposes. How do you make money?
So we charge a flat fee. So we never take a percentage of how much more they raise. We have stories. In fact, we got a testimonial letter from St. Louis yesterday that they literally quadrupled how much they were hoping to raise. So if you can imagine, if they're trying to raise $20,000 and we quadruple that and they raise $80,000 and we took a percentage, that would be a lot of money that we would make. So we don't do that. We charge a flat fee, and that's negotiated up front, and that depends on the complexity of the event. And so what that means is that just because they're going to raise maybe $3 million, like a big Ronald McDonald event, doesn't mean that it's very complex. What makes it complex is how many people are coming to the event, how many items they're having, are they doing just a paddle raise, is there a lot of moving parts. That makes it more complex, and that forces us to send more people to make sure that everything runs smoothly. And so it doesn't matter for us if you raise $10,000 or $10 million, it's the fee is going to be the fee, and it's a reasonable fee.
It sounds like you are very involved with the day-to-day operations of this company. Is that important for a CEO to do, or is it better for a CEO to back off and let their people work? Because it's a question we often see is, well, is a helicopter hurting or helping a business?
Yeah, so I have a great senior leadership team. And so, you know, Richie, who I mentioned earlier, is our CTO. Steve, who I mentioned earlier, is our senior vice president of sales and operations. And then we just actually had our first person that handles our product for us, Ryan. And so I am involved. I understand what's going on, but I'll be the first one to say that I am not technical. So Richie does his thing. I am a salesperson, so I'm actually pretty good at that. But when it comes to operations and stuff, I leave Steve to that. And then in terms of what we're going to build next, I'll also be the first one to say that I'm not smart enough to figure out what we should build next. So that's what Ryan's job is, to analyze all the data, figure out where we can have the most impact, and figure out what we're going to build next.
So you know what my next question is going to be, right? Is what are you going to build next?
Well, we have about 1,100 ideas, of what we can build next. We have our roadmap built until 2020. So now the only thing we need to do is hire more developers.
And you're helping daily these charities raise money. I mean, little kids with cancer, you name it. I mean, the people that are in need, you're helping.
Yeah, there's always an auction that's in flight for us right now. And so, yeah, it's, you know, the events usually take place on Fridays and Saturdays, although I think today we have six. You know, it just all depends.
What is it like being in the Chicago atmosphere? Is there a positive or negative to your company? Is it something you would recommend to others who are starting companies?
Oh yeah, I really enjoy working in Chicago, and I think that we do have a good foundation for great people. And anytime you build a company, I don't care what it is, you need to have great people. And I think that definitely happens here in the city.
Jim Alvarez, the CEO of Gesture. You can find Gesture at gesture.com and Gesture Team at Gesture Team on Twitter. Our CEO Spotlight sponsored by Allstate. It's 5:28, time for Tech Trends on the Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, making the skies safer as more and more drones take flight. Researchers at NASA Ames are working to create a low-altitude air traffic control system.
Command, this is North Dakota. We have our third bird in the air.
They're currently testing a cloud-based system that uses algorithms to know where drones are operating and to send an alert when they stray from their flight path. Joe Rios is a NASA engineer.
We're still at the stage of defining how soon you would have to alert somebody. When do you have to alert somebody?
There could be more than 2 million drones flying at low altitudes within the next 5 years, some delivering packages, others inspecting bridges and power lines. And all of these unmanned aircraft will need to coexist along with drones operated by hobbyists. Rios says having one giant system may not be the right answer.
What's the right architecture? How many of these systems have to operate to manage all the little different regional airspaces that we expect to be active at any given time?
NASA has been asked by the FAA to come up with a workable system by 2019. With Tech Trends, I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We had our jobs report on Friday. Shows more employers may be starting to hire. Certainly, there are more people out in the workforce trying to get a job. And so that means the job interview is right around the corner. Have you ever fretted about this? Are they asking the right questions? Am I answering the right way? Am I dressed the right way? There are 101 job interview questions you'll never fear again is the basis of a new book that's out. It's now in hardback and available. James Reed is the author of it. He's the chairman of Reed, the recruitment specialist, and he is with us on the Opening Bell from London this morning about the book. Again, 101 job interview questions you'll never fear again. Mr. Reed, thanks first for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning. I suppose the first question is there any way that we can, is there a science to this, basically, the job interview, or is it something that we just go into willy-nilly?
Well, the first thing I want to say is it's totally normal to feel nervous when you go into a job interview. I mean, 60% of our respondents admitted to feeling nervous before a job interview, and I'm sure there are a lot more who feel nervous who didn't admit it. So that's really normal. And I think it's what the key message of mine is: be prepared, and that will really help with nerves. And the old saying is true, you know, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. If you're prepared when you go into an interview, you will feel a lot more confident, and that confidence will come across to the interviewer, and that will be very helpful to you. So the whole process here is trying to share with someone who's applying for jobs, sharing the questions that they might be, you know, very likely to be asked, why they're being asked those questions, and how to think about answering them. And that's the basis of the book, 101 Job Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again.
Is there is there one question that people get the most that they fail on the most?
Well, there's one question. I mean, what's interesting, what we did is we crowdsourced these questions. So we surveyed thousands of employers, and we asked them, what's your favorite interview question? And we got hundreds and hundreds of questions back, and we put the questions that were most commonly asked and the questions that were most interesting into the book. So these are real questions being asked by real interviewers right now that you can expect. You're going to get asked some of these questions when you go for an interview. And the first question in the book is as old as the hills. It's, tell me about yourself. And that's the most commonly asked question. And it's a very easy question to fall over if you haven't prepared. And you'd be surprised. You know, some people go on long rambles, you know, start embarking on their life story when asked that question. When the interviewer's not interested in that, they want to know what they can bring to their party and help solve their particular problems, which is the job they're here to talk about. So, you know, bringing a professional answer to that question and then throwing in some personal information at the end is the right approach. But a lot of people aren't ready for it. And when you're not ready for it, it's very difficult to answer.
A lot of people prepare for those nuts and bolts questions of how I'm good for the job or how I might fit into the job. Is there a danger in over-preparing an answer to questions like these?
Well, you can over-prepare, especially if you're just giving, you know, canned answers. I think that's it's very easy in the sort of echo chamber of the internet to find, you know, answers to questions, and people have heard them all before. So what's important when you go to an interview is to give a true account of yourself and to be true to yourself so that the person interviewing you is getting to know you. That's what they're hoping to achieve through the conversation. And if you're giving them pat canned answers, you're frustrating them in that ambition and you will fail. They don't want to hear them. So, you know, having a little bit more confidence to talk about what you want to talk about is really important. And that's why it's important to think about, you know, why do I want this job? What type of work do I really want to be doing? What's right for me before you embark on the interview process?
What I like about this book is that it sort of decodes some of these questions as well. A question may be asked and the person asking it may be looking for a whole different kind of answer, even though you may answer it in a routine way. I mean, give us an idea of some of these questions that we should watch out for.
Well, the way the book is set out is it gives you a question and then it gives you the real question behind the question. So, you know, what they're really wanting to find out and a tactic to answer it. You know, I've just opened it and question 45, if you could go back and change one thing about your career to date, what would it be? So that's the question you've been given. And behind that, the real question, is there something bad about you that I cannot see? And if there is, can I get you to admit it? Do you carry psychological baggage that you don't need? How readily do you forgive yourself and others? So that sort of gives you an insight as to what, you know, is behind the question and why you're being asked it. And then, you know, we give a top line tactic for answering that question. Give the interviewer a little bit of grit, but never use the word regret in your answer. Focus on something positive and say you wish you'd done more of it, then stop talking. That's quite important.
Another one of those questions.
You know, that's a flavor for you.
Yeah, another one of those questions is, have you ever stolen a pen from work?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? There's a Korean edition of this book, and they reduced the number of questions for the Korean edition from 101 to 98. And that was one of the three questions that got scratched. So I thought it was interesting. I'm sure we've all stolen pens from work. I certainly have. But, you know, I haven't taken boxes of stationery from the office. I've got a pen in my pocket that I take to and from work and I use, you know, maybe writing a birthday card to a friend and at work.
Someone told me once that employers generally know when you come in for an interview, they generally have an idea who they want to hire, and they're just trying to confirm their belief. Is that fair to say? Is it pretty much a decision that's already been made and it's yours to lose or win?
I really hope that's not the case, because I think that would be wrong for both the employer and the applicant. Because, I mean, typically there's more than one candidate for a job. And ideally, as a recruiter, as an employer, you should want to have more than one candidate for a job so you can see what's available, you know, what the market has to offer, I suppose, at the most basic level. And you're wasting everyone's time if you've already made your mind up before the interview. And I think that the important thing that really interviewers are trying to find out more about is you as a person. What is your character? And you can't really tell that from a resume. And you can't tell that from someone's online profile. You can only really tell that by really sitting down and talking to them. And even then, it's an inexact art. But what you're trying to do as a recruiter is find out as much as you really can about that person and then to assess whether they're the right person for the role. And you can't possibly have done that before they've opened their mouth.
James Reed, the author of 101 Job Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again, unless you're in Korea, where it's 98 Job Interview Questions.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the Dow Futures this morning from the WGN Market Desk, Dow Futures up about 45 points. S&P, NASDAQ also showing an open that'll be higher on Wall Street later on. Let's get the latest from the commodity news market. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we look back at the week ended at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, well, at the Merc, live cattle futures on Friday, the sixth consecutive day of gains. Not huge, but at least moving higher in that up and down market. And at the end of the week on Friday, we saw the June live cattle contract up $1.25 at $120.87. On the other hand, the May lean hog contract dropped 82 cents Friday to end at 76.75. Cash hog trade in the Midwest, though, was steady at most of the markets. The big move in the Board of Trade activity on Friday, May soybeans up 26 and a quarter cents. And again, concern about the Argentine soybean crop that has been hit hard by rains at harvest time. So at the end of the day, Friday, we saw May soybeans at $10.26 and a quarter, and May corn held pretty well too at 4 1/4 cents higher at 3.76. But once again, with the weather across the country over the weekend, how many acres did we get planted? We'll find out this afternoon at 3 o'clock with the USDA report. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Back with our conversation this morning, James Reed is the author of 101 Job Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again. James with us this morning from London. James, is there any way to know after we've come out of one of these job interviews whether we've really done well or not, or is it just something that is very subjective?
Well, it's interesting. What prompted us to research and write the book in the first place is over half of job seekers leave interviews feeling that they were underprepared when they went in. And 3 out of 4 of us wish we'd had a better idea of what questions to expect before a job interview. So, there's a lot of regret, if you like, about I could have done that better. Now, if you're feeling you're getting good signal, I mean, there are some pretty good signals that you might be getting. A very obvious one is, when can you start? that suggests that they want you. And if you hear that, that's a big green light, and that's good news. Other jobs, what other jobs have you applied to? If they're asking that, they're going to be worried that they might be competing for you, which is a good sign too. And as someone who runs a business, my greatest fear is not recruiting the wrong person. It's not recruiting the right person. The one that gets away, who then does something brilliant for my competitor, or out there who I really wish we'd secured. And you never really know. And I think that's what employers should be worried about. They don't want to jump to conclusions. They want to make sure they get the very best people.
With your level of experience, this next question is probably going to be one that will be very insightful for us. And that is, we all can prepare and answer these questions as employee candidates, but what kinds of questions are asked? What kind of weird questions or bizarre questions do employers ask that we should be ready for?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing. There are quite a few curveball questions in the book that people are still asking, and the people associated these questions a while ago with Google and new tech companies, but they're very widely asked now. They might have thought them up. But, if you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be and why is a question that keeps coming up. And the age-old one for anyone entering a sales role, sell me this pen. I mean, that was in the movie Wolf of Wall Street. It keeps coming up. So, those ones. And then more sort of curveball-type questions like, how many traffic lights do you think there are in New York? I mean, that question comes up. And why are people asking these questions? Well, they're trying to throw the applicant off balance. They're trying to put them under a bit of pressure to see how they respond. So there's no right answer to the question, but there is a right way of responding, which is, don't panic, stay calm, and try and reason an answer that makes sense. Because, you know, at work, we're all in situations, you know, all the time where we're surprised things go wrong. You know, it's not a smooth day-to-day experience necessarily. And that the reason they ask these questions is to see what you'd likely be like under pressure. And lots of people hate these questions. Some people say, I'll walk out of an interview if I got asked a stupid question like that. Well, that's up to you, but you're quite likely to be asked them, which is why they're in the book.
And, you know, being interviewed for a job and going to a job interview seems as old as rocks. It seems like this has not really changed over so many years. Has it changed? Is it something that is different now than it was back then?
Well, some of the questions have changed. Yeah, I mean, one of the other questions that got scrapped by the Korean edition, which was interesting, of the three, was, you know, what do you think is the most searched for phrase on YouTube? Which is obviously a question that's pertinent to our period, and you wouldn't have asked 20 years ago. What do you think is the most searched for phrase on YouTube? And I think that the reason some people don't like it or are sensitive around it is they think there's some innuendo involved. Well, the answer to that question is the most searched for phrase on YouTube is how to. So it might be how to bake a cake, how to fix a carburetor. That's the most searched for on YouTube, is a great educational resource. So there are questions like that that are new. But then there are other questions like, what are your greatest strengths and weaknesses, that frankly are as old as the hills.
James Reed is the author of 101 Job Interview Questions You'll Never Fear Again, out in paperback now. Good, as we head into the job hiring season, lots of companies now starting to look for employment. James Reed is the chairman of Reed, the recruitment specialist from London, this morning on The Opening Bell. Thanks for being with us. That's our show for today. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow with another edition of The Opening Bell at 5 a.m. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Our production help from Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer this morning is Ben Cortez.